Welcome to Parents Perspective. The dentist's office is always a place where a parent's patience is tested. After one such trying adventure, I noticed a harried young mother self-addressing her requisite postcard for office use as an appointment reminder. She stopped for a minute, closed her eyes, sighed, and then picked up her pen with a vengeance. I looked over at her postcard. She had written, "You are a fantastic person," across the front. From a parent's perspective, what are the real benefits of humor to our health? And how can we find more of it in our daily lives? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has created what he terms the laughter remedy and was truly a pioneer in humor research. Dr. Paul E. McGee laid the groundwork for the current interest in the health benefits of humor. A developmental psychologist, he's internationally known for his own humor research and has published a number of articles and books on humor. These include Health, Healing, and the Amuse System, Understanding and Promoting the Development of Children's Humor, and Stumblebees and Pelophones, How to Develop a Powerful Verbal Sense of Humor. He offers programs on humor and health and stress management to corporations, hospitals, and other organizations interested in learning more about the benefits of humor and how to build them into your life. He's the father of two young children. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. McGee.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. The pleasure's one-third mine.
See, now you have to do math for the show.
Right. What would you say is the most important thing you have learned about how humor affects health?
Well, it's hard to sort it out to what's most important because there's a lot of exciting findings now. But I guess if I had to put it into one category, it's the idea that your emotional state makes an important contribution, not just to the way you feel, but physical health and well-being. There's a whole new area of medicine called psychoneuroimmunology. That's a mouthful, but P&I for short. And what that area of research has shown over the last 20, 25 years is that your emotional state, your beliefs, your attitudes, your thoughts, you know, they can have a significant impact on your physical health and well-being. And humor and laughter are a powerful tool for sort of quickly generating a positive emotional state and pulling you out of a negative emotional state and sort of generating those positive effects.
Would you include stress in that negative emotional state category?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I couldn't earn a living doing this if it weren't for other people's stress. I mean, I hate to say that. And it doesn't matter where you go in the country. And the same problem is happening in Europe and around the world now. Everywhere you go, people have more stress at work than they used to have. The metaphor we have is doing more with less. You know, the people who you used to know and have friends in your office aren't there anymore, and you're doing the work that they used to do. You've got to do things faster. You've got to provide products and services faster. You've got to keep up with the information explosion. Everybody has more on their plate than they used to. And families are experiencing this as stress. You know, I just did a program last night for parents, and it was very clear from all over the room that everybody's got more on their plate as families. And so we talked about this, that being a parent is stressful enough as it is, but people are bringing stress home from their jobs. And that stress, if you don't have tools for letting go of that stress at work, it colors your interaction with your kids. And none of us can be effective parents when we're carrying around the stress that happened at work. So we've all got stress everywhere in our lives. You know, some of us have it from work. Some of us have it from our families. Other people have it from physical health issues they're dealing with, financial problems. We've got the threat of terrorism, bioterrorism hanging over us. We're still recovering from 9/11. And so, you know, coming back to your original question, what's the most important thing? I think it's to maintain our sanity and to maintain mental health, good mental health and physical health and wellness. We've got to have some tools for that make us more emotionally resilient, tools we didn't need before. And there's all kinds of evidence that humor is really an effective tool in giving you that resilience you need to be effective on the job and as well as in your family.
What was the biggest surprise that you found when you started on this track?
To be honest, there haven't been any real surprises because I've, you know, from day one been on top of the research as it's been developing. And we can talk about what that research shows in terms of physical health and wellness. But before getting there, I'll say that the biggest surprise to me is it's taken so long for people to take this humor research seriously. I can remember, I finished graduate school back in olden times in 1968. So I spent 20 years as an academic person just doing basic research on humor and laughter before becoming a speaker. And in the 1970s, I used to have a collection of AP or UPI write-ups after, like, my conference would be the American Psychological Association. And after a meeting, we might have one session on humor, and the media would often pick it up, and I had several articles would say things like, well, these are difficult times. We've got the threat of nuclear war. We've got cancer. We've got pollution. But at least we've got our sense of humor to carry us through. And now they're trying to take that away from us.
Oh, dear.
And the idea in the 1970s was if you study humor, you're going to wind up making everybody very serious. Some things are better off left, you know, like a mystery. Sort of the way I guess Kinsey had this problem in studying sexuality a long time ago. But people didn't want to study humor. You know, it's better off left alone because the impression was that, well, we'd all be seriously analyzed. No, why is that funny? You know, and we would destroy our ability to just spontaneously laugh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That hasn't happened. And that all changed in 1979. There was a publication of a book in 1979 that changed the media approach and changed the general public sense of, you know, whether or not we should really look at humor and laughter. Ah, now you're trying to guess. Okay, what happened in 1979? The book was called Anatomy of an Illness. It was by Norman Cousins. Norman Cousins was the former editor of Saturday Review magazine. And in short, his story was that he came down with a condition called ankylosing spondylitis. It's a mouthful. Degenerative spinal condition. And basically, his spine was fusing together. And he was in constant pain. And he couldn't turn over in bed without being in pain. And he and his doctors were aware of the negative impact that negative emotion has on health, especially if it's chronic. If you're someone who's always angry, who's always depressed, always tense or anxious, you know, we know that that catches up with you in the long run, especially. So they decided, well, why shouldn't the opposite be true? Why shouldn't it be true if you immerse yourself in positive emotion in some way that that'll somehow, you know, nudge the body's health and healing mechanisms in a positive direction? So with the consent of his doctors and in the presence of a nurse full-time, he was in a hospital in New York. He checked himself out of the hospital into a hotel nearby. There was a nurse present full-time. He watched Marx Brothers films, candid camera reruns, and I forget what else, things that were funny to him. He invited friends over. He was a friend of Alan Funtz. So he got a lot of candid camera stuff, especially. And he did a lot of belly laughter, and he noticed right away that he was experiencing less pain. And so the book, Anatomy of an Illness, which has been in I forget how many languages all over the world, it was like Sputnik, you know, for this mind-body issue in terms of laughter and humor. It's just an anecdote. It doesn't prove anything, but it really made people stop and think, well, maybe there is something to this idea that laughter is good for you. We know. We've always known it feels good, and now we know why it feels so good, at least one reason. So that was really a turning point. It's a long story related to the fact that, you know, the attitudes toward humor and the health and wellness benefits of humor changed as a result of that.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on humor for your health.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Paul McGee about humor for your health. Now, we've always heard that endorphins come along when you exercise and so forth. Are there physiological changes that are permanent or temporary or what when you have
humor? There's a combination of the two. Some are permanent, some are temporary, and some are sort of temporary, but if you do it a lot, then they become permanent in terms of their benefits. Blood pressure is a good example of that. But the endorphin issue, here's the surprise. I'm sure your listeners, including listeners who are physicians possibly, say, well, one thing we know about humor and laughter is it produces endorphins. We've all heard that. It's in the media. We've heard, seen it printed. We've heard it on television and radio. Here's the surprise. There's no published evidence showing that laughter produces endorphins. It was mentioned in the foreword to Norman Cousins' book, Anatomy of an Illness, that because he experienced less pain, his doctors speculated that it must be because endorphins are produced. Literally, that means endogenous morphine, the body's own source of a pain-killing device. So it's an assumption we've made all along. There's plenty of evidence, 30-some studies now, that show that laughter does reduce pain, but there's no published research showing that it's because of endorphins. So it's the explanation that's not clear, but there's no doubt that there's good studies with clinical studies. Patients who have pain, chronic pain, it helps them reduce the pain. You can experimentally induce pain, and laughter will reduce that. So there's no doubt about the fact that it's a good pain reducer. But laughter and humor are good at something else that you can probably think of. I'll give your listeners a chance to think of. Now, why would laughter reduce pain? What else is it good for? And so one thing is that it's a good relaxation technique. Last night in a program I did, and I always do this, we do a laughter exercise because, you know, I'll ask people, well, how many of you have had a good belly laugh, you know, either with your kids, and we talk about the importance of sharing laughter with your kids, you know, or at work. And usually there's about 20-25% of the hands. And so people have either forgotten how to laugh, they're too stressed out, they're pulled in too many directions. So I get a bunch of people up front and we'll do a laughter exercise. And then I'll ask them, well, what do you notice that's different? And 90% of the time, one of the first two or three things that are stated are, oh, I just feel more relaxed. People say, also, well, I feel good. I feel better. I feel more alert. But I feel more relaxed is in there. And the reason that's important, it's the number one goal of all stress management techniques, muscle relaxation and the easing of psychological tensions that goes along with it. So a lot of pain centers, a lot of hospitals use relaxation techniques to reduce the dependence on medication. So maybe that's the reason. It also is a good mental distractor. You know, humor distracts you from the source of not just psychological pain and discomfort, but there's every reason to think that at the physical, you know, level, the pain channeling mechanisms are operating differently.
So I have a question. Short of having laugh tracks around the clock, if you're in pain, what can you do to keep that pain relief with you? You said some things stay with you.
Ah, well, so how do you build more humor and laughter in your own life? That's the hard part, isn't it? I've had people tell me quite often, well, you're either born with a good sense of humor or you're not, and I wasn't.
I love it.
There's nothing I can do about that.
Here, let me tickle your feet.
But, I mean, that's absolutely not the case. The one book you mentioned, Linda, in introducing me, Health, Healing, and the Immune System, the first part of it talks about the basic research on humor and health and coping with stress. But the last half of the book is a hands-on skill development program. It shows people how to develop the basic foundation skills you need to use humor eventually as a coping tool. And it's been tested with seniors, average age in the 70s. And so there's the evidence. You know, it's not too late. And it's a group of seniors over an eight-week period showed significant improvement in their ability to cope with life stress. Another group of seniors that didn't actively work on building their humor skills but just passively watched things that were funny to them, you know, from the 40s and 50s showed no improvement. So it's not too late. I think the most important thing is to get back in touch with the playful side of yourself, especially, I mean, if you're a parent and listening to this, you have no excuse. And the younger your child, the closer they are to having play built into what they do all day long. That's what kids' work is, right? It's play. We're biologically designed, you know, to seek out opportunities for fun and play. It's part of our evolutionary heritage. And so that's the one thing that parents lose, is they lose, you know, for good reasons. They're stressed out at work. You know, they're pulled in too many directions. And some people feel that, well, I'm a professional, you know, I'm 40 years old. I'm not going to do that. But if you are comfortable with just letting yourself go, especially being physically playful or mentally playful, sharing humor with your kids, your own natural sense of humor comes out. The sense of humor you used to have when you were, you know, before you lost it for whatever reasons.
I think you have to pick up on what's going on with your kids, because kids say funny things or lead you towards funny circumstances.
Absolutely.
My little granddaughter is just approaching two, and her parents were sitting out on the deck at our house one sunny morning, and she comes walking out there with me, and she hears the birds, much more aware of what's going on around her than the rest of us. And she says, "Good morning, birdies." We would not have said that, of course,
right.
But we loved that she did, and we all laughed, you know.
And you want to seize the opportunity whenever it comes. In fact, without trying, actually, for parents, they can get you laughing just because of you having a different window on what they're doing or saying than they do. I mean, I know a woman who got on a bus in this town. The rules in this town were if you're five or over, you have to pay. If you're under five, you ride for free. So the girl just, you know, walked back, and the mom paid for herself. And the bus driver says, just a moment, little girl, how old are you? She says, 4 1/2. And when will you be five? Soon as I get off this bus. She was brutally honest.
Yes, she was.
It's interesting. When I hear this, I think, you know, parents have a built-in laugh track with the kids in a way that we wouldn't even think about it, because just their use of language, their observations of things. I remember a very old show with a fellow named Art Linkletter earned a living asking children things like, well, what did your mom tell you not to say when you came on the program?
Right. That was wonderful.
Yeah, kids say the darndest things.
That's right. That's right.
In what ways has your knowledge about humor and health affected your own behavior?
Well, it's always been there. It's written on my second grade report card twice. Paul plays too much. but what it has done, you know, it's sort of tuned me in on making it a point to build humor and fun and laughter in. And, you know, since I had kids later in life, I'm over 30.
What a surprise.
My kids are over 30 and that's when they have
their know.
So, you know, it's easy to do. It's easy for any parent who has kids. Well, the easy part is before they go to school. And then the more challenging part is as they get into, you know, elementary and junior high and during the teen years, to find ways of sharing a laughter at the same time. But, you know, I make it a point to build things in. You know, like in our family, we have Friday night is funny movie night. You know, so we watch movies together. You know, I'll bring things home from the library and that are choices, you know, and usually it's my 6-year-old. I have a 6- and a 3-year-old, and usually it's the 6-year-old who decides. And so we make sure it's nothing that's not appropriate for the 3-year-old. But, you know, that's a way of having it built in. Another thing we do is at dinner. We've just been doing this for a couple months now. We play Mad Libs. And if you're not familiar with Mad Libs, basically what it is I mean, you can buy these stories. It's just a little, like, maybe 2 or 3 paragraph story. And there's the key sort of part of a sentence missing. And then, you know, the child, the kids or adults, you know, take turns. It'll ask for it. Well, give me an adjective. Give me an adverb. Give me a name of a person. And so you throw in these words, and then without knowing what the context is, and then you read it afterwards. And
you can build little English majors.
Absolutely. That's right. That's right. Our 6-year-old knows what these things are now.
That's right. We used to do Mad Libs in the car whenever we traveled.
Yeah, it's a great thing to do in the car.
Well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Very cute.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on humor for your health.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Paul McGee about humor for your health.
One of the things that you were mentioning with the Mad Libs, I was thinking about, we've used Mad Libs for years with the kids, but as they got to be a certain age, some of the words that were inserted may have been funny, but they were really inappropriate.
Right.
What advice would you give to parents of teenagers?
Well, I think in some ways, the advice for teenagers is similar to the advice at other levels, and that is, as a parent, you want to find ways of connecting with your kids in the spirit of fun and play at their level. Their level might gross you out. and so you've got to establish limits. But at the beginning, I talked about the fact that, you know, families are stressed out. You know, we don't have time. That's the one thing that's missing, that parents, I hear it a lot from parents, you know, that, you know, I really thought when I became a parent I'd have this built-in source of joy, you know, with my kids every day, and it's not happening. And part of why that's not happening is that we don't have time. We don't have it built in to have playtime, fun time, you know, with our kids. So my advice is early as possible. It might be hard to start during the teen years, but as early as possible, you know, really build in at the child's level, at the junior high or teenager's level, things to do that are fun. I mean, I have another book that wasn't mentioned that's really full of jokes, adult jokes, with a key part of the punchline missing. So this is something that teens and adults can do together. It's competitive, and, you know, some of them are, you know, pushing the envelope a little bit and for appropriateness, so you know, they're not for kids. But it's a way of connecting, and your teenager gets to show you how not with it you are, because they'll probably get more than you are, and this will be a source of fun. Anything which can make you look not so competent, you know. But see if you can do this in a fun way. I mean, the teenagers are in the process of establishing their own identity. And if you can show that you can sort of even be the butt of the joke, you know, and deal with it, then, well, that sort of helps break down the barriers.
It shows that it's okay
to
be in that position.
That's right.
Because it happens to kids, too.
Right, absolutely. In fact, kids who have this, you know, early on as a skill, I mean, laughing at yourself, it's actually not so easy for teens to laugh at their own exams. Teens are very good at poking fun at everybody else. In fact, you know, there's really an increase during the teen, from junior high and teens, in sarcasm and ridiculing. And so it makes it difficult for parents to connect, because what you really want to do is get them to just cut out that, you know, that kind of behavior. And so I guess one trick is to find safe targets. And depending on your politics, I mean, you can always, if you sense that you're in the same place, you can poke fun at the current political leaders. It doesn't matter which party they are. If you sense that your teenage son is another direction, you probably don't want to go there. But find something you agree on. And given that they are so into ridiculing, well, then ridicule safe targets that aren't going to be putting down a particular person, an ethnic group or racial group or whatever.
That's where your custom of watching funny movies together might carry out for years to come. Yeah. It may not always be Friday nights, because that might be football night at your children's high school. But for your children and their friends to know that there's a night when everybody gets together to watch a funny movie, you might be very pleasantly surprised. Yeah. Over the years, it might cost you a lot in pizza and soda over those years, but I think that's a great idea to start young and keep going
It's funny, our family, which I think is fairly typical in this way, has certain lines from movies that the kids, when they were little, not like 2 and 3, but maybe like 10 or 12 or something, like to watch over and over and over, and all somebody has to do is say that line, and everybody can finish the whole line, and it's quite funny.
Yeah, and see, there's, I don't know if I've said this here today or not, but there's a bonding process that goes on with humor. There's good research establishing, and whether it's kids or adults, there's an emotional connection. It's, you know, when we laugh, you know, there's a positive emotion coming out. And some, the older our kids get, you know, there's a lot of the interaction that has a lot of tension to it. There's some negativity, you know, there's conflict that's there. So what you want to do is you want to build in as much as possible those good, joyful, positive memories. And this once a week shared fun night or shared movie night, it doesn't have to be movies. It could also be fun things. Or at dinner time, as your kids get older, everybody shares the funniest thing that happened to them today. Or if there's none today, then since we did it last. You've probably heard the phrase, you know, the couple or the family that prays together stays together. See, my variation of it is the family that plays together stays together.
Yes.
And after they get out of those difficult teens, you know, and then they're in their 20s and 30s, and they will think back fondly, you know, of that positive connection, all those great feelings we have when we shared laughter and fun together on whatever night it was, fun movie night.
And that's when you find out that they really were listening, and they really were taking it all in.
Absolutely.
And they're then applying it to their own growing families.
Well, we have certainly enjoyed what we are doing with having you with us. And we wanted to get, before we left, any names of websites, books, or articles, anything that you feel that our listeners could use as a resource to continue learning about humor.
There's an organization called, it's AATH, it's the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor. And it's been in existence for probably about 15 years or so. It used to be mainly nurses and healthcare professionals. Now it's broadened to to people in general. And they have a meeting every year, but the website is full of tons of resources, articles. There's a connection to other websites, listing of books related to humor. And so rather than list a lot of them, you know, people can go in a lot of directions with this. So it's aath.org.
And your website, Paul?
And my own website talks about the basic research also on humor and health. There's articles on humor in the workplace and on children's humor and parenting issues. And that's www.laughterremedy.com. Put both R's in the middle. Just run laughter and remedy together.
Well, this has been a wonderful remedy for us. We have had a fabulous time interviewing you, Dr. Paul McGee. So thanks so much for being with us
today. It's been a pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of one of Dr. McGee's books, Stumblebees and Pelophones, or Understanding and Promoting the Development of Children's Humor. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's very helpful to us. Mention show number 297 and tell us what station you're listening to if you can. Since we air all over the world, it's always fun to know where you're tuning in. Our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is available in all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. At the site, you can even hear a show at any time. Just scroll down to the topic or guest of your choice and click onto the words Listen to Podcast below. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.